WEEI Studios, 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. We're always live on the free Odyssey app.
Seemed to go over too well with the agent for Jaden Daniels, Ron Butler, who sounded off on social media last night that he didn't seem particularly pleased with the process. I think Jaden Daniels thought it would be a visit with just him, meeting with the Commanders. Many people think that Jaden Daniels will wind up being the number two overall pick, but the Commanders essentially opened up the process.
So how about that? Adam Schefter earlier today. Jaden Daniels, not a fan of all those quarterbacks being in. He was under the impression he was going to be the only quarterback in Washington.
That's awkward.
Okay, now remember, the idea that Jaden Daniels didn't want to go to Washington and was trying to strong-arm his way to New England, that predates the quarterback visits to Washington. So this might have been like a long-standing issue. I still can't remember who had the initial reporting. But it was something like, was it Rap Sheet? It was something like Jaden Daniels' meetings haven't gone well with the Commanders,
yeah, right?
Okay? That was before any quarterback meetings had been scheduled. Because I'm like, well, how much stock should we put in this report? He hasn't visited them yet. Well, now he visited, and he was under the impression he was going to be the only quarterback visiting. Just like he was the only quarterback visiting the Patriots. And J.J. McCarthy was the only quarterback visiting the Patriots.
I thought I was the only QB you were talking
Drake
to.
Drake May was the only one visiting. And it's like, yeah, fine, talk to other quarterbacks. I got to be here with all the other guys?
That is a really awkward way that they set it up.
Okay, well, I gave you the theory as to why, because a lot of people around the league are perplexed by
Didn't
that.
Didn't they say because that was the only day that Josh Harris was in?
This is Florio's theory. And so a lot of people around the league are flummoxed by that. And it's hour number three, Jones and Mego with Arcan here on WEEI. And the reason we're talking the Commanders and their visit with Jaden Daniels is because if Jaden Daniels didn't like how it went down, maybe the Commanders are getting feelers that he doesn't want to go there. And maybe they're rethinking their stance on Jaden Daniels, where just last week, Schefter was telling a Commanders podcast, yeah, go buy your jerseys now. Go buy your Jaden Daniels jerseys now. That's the pick. And I took that as definitive. Now he's backtracking a little bit. And he's not saying he won't be the pick, but just saying the meeting didn't go well. Because Jaden Daniels was under the impression he was going to be the only quarterback visiting, like most of these QB visits. And I know what Bill said the other day on McAfee. Oh, yeah, we try to group them all together. We have all the same positional groups in, not quarterbacks. You bring in tackles together. You bring in tight ends together, wide receivers, cornerbacks, not QBs. Not QBs. And so, whatever, maybe this speaks volumes about Jaden Daniels and how he comports himself, carries himself, views himself. Like, maybe there are more red flags around character, and I've flagged those on Caleb Williams in the past.
Would you flag him for character on this?
I mean, I flag him for not wanting to go where he's drafted. Yeah, I would have flagged Caleb Williams for that. I would have flagged Eli for that, John Elway for that.
I don't think it's a red flag if he felt like this was an awkward setup and he didn't like it.
Are any of the other quarterbacks complaining? He wasn't the only quarterback there. Have you heard Drake May wasn't happy with how the meeting
went?
Not
yet, but I bet it's his agent who's talking more on his behalf. Well, it sounds like his agent didn't like the way it went.
Okay, well, if Drake May is getting bumped up the board, Drake May's agent may not like how it went either. Drake May may not like how it went either.
Nobody can understand Drake May or his agent.
That's a fair point. I don't know who his agent is. But,
I'm just assuming that his agent has the same accent.
It's his agent is actually Boomhauer.
I predict a quarterback to let one out on the field. Not no way you do that.
So, yeah, no, I think that's a red flag. And by the way, I think J.J. about the only prospect I don't really think has a lot of red flags character-wise is Drake May. I don't like J.J. McCarthy's hippie barefoot stuff in the end zone either. I don't like that. So a lot of them I go, eh. And it's part of why I have Drake May at the top of the board. But I didn't have any on Jaden Daniels until recently, like a week ago. He doesn't want to go to Washington. He wants to strong-arm his way to New England. Weird. This is a horrible destination and a crappy team. Why do you want to come here? And he feels like he was too big for four quarterbacks showing up. And I do agree that's an awkward setup. But I haven't heard any of the other quarterbacks squawking about it. So why is he?
Maybe it's an excuse. He hasn't wanted to go there the whole time, and now this is a way that they can demonstrate, like, hey, they don't do things right in Washington, and so it's an awkward fit, and we don't like it. It could be that. Like, I could very easily see that. I don't know. Sometimes we know this. Sometimes agents, like, they get talkative, and they think that they're doing something on behalf of their client, and it actually makes them look like, you know, not so great.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't really have any problem with it, honestly. I don't care if he decides to strong-arm his way out of Washington or strong-arm his way out of anything. I don't know what his reasons are. I'd like to know what they are. But, I mean, you just mentioned the Eli and John Elway. It worked out great for the teams that ended up with those guys.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with that if that's what he ends up doing. And he strong-arms his way to the Patriots. The Giants won two Super Bowls with Eli, and so did the Broncos with Elway.
Yeah, fine.
And Elway's one of the greatest QBs ever. So, I mean, I know it's not literally the same, but it's the same kind of idea. And also, Jones, we're talking about a day and age now with this NIL stuff where these college kids come in. They're much more empowered than they used to be coming out of college.
You're saying that, but he's the only one doing it.
Yeah, sure. But I'm saying, in general, it makes more sense that that's happening now, and I think it'll probably happen more often. I think you're going to see more of that.
It happened in 1983 with John Elway. It happened in 2004 or whatever it was with Eli Manning. And
right.
So, yeah.
And the NIL stuff is just starting like this year, so I think that you're probably going to see more.
Well, again, he's the only one. I don't know that it's NIL or not. I mean, I don't know that that's what the trend is. I've seen quarterbacks do it before. I didn't like when Eli did it. It worked out for the Giants, sure. But I didn't like when he did it. I didn't like Elway doing it. Especially when you're not even the top guy. Like, I get it a little bit more with Eli and Elway. You were the number one guy. You're like a special prospect in the case of Elway. I don't think anybody viewed Eli as a special generational type prospect.
It was Eli, Rivers, and Roethlisberger that year, right?
Eli was viewed as the best quarterback in his draft. He wasn't viewed as like a generational prospect. Elway's like an all-time prospect is how he's viewed. Coming out of college, he's like an all-time quarterback prospect.
Yeah.
Like a Peyton Manning. He's one of those, not Eli, but that level of prospect. So, like, you're special, fine. Jaden Daniels might not even be the number two quarterback in his class. He's definitely not the special prospect in the class. So why are you doing this?
And by the way, it's a very recent development. I mean, look, we went through most of the college season saying, oh, it's Caleb Williams and it's Drake May. It's Caleb Williams and it's Drake May. Jaden Daniels, who's 23, it's not like he's the youngest pup in the entire class. He all of a sudden has this wonderful season, shows tremendous development, and wins the Heisman. And now it's like, seems a little different. I'm going to call my own shots, this and that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a bad look. I do. I would say that about any quarterback. I would say that if Drake May was doing it. I've said it when the rumors and reports were out about Caleb Williams months ago. I just don't like it.
Yeah,
I think it shows a little bit of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's like self-importance. Like, the whole thing of I'm my own brand and I'm going to do what's best for me here and this and that. And I don't know. If I was a fan, like, maybe part of it is that it's Washington and I'm like, that's my team. Go there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Elway didn't like Irsay and he didn't like the coach in Baltimore, whoever that was at the time. I remember that. And with Eli, I don't know exactly why he didn't like the Chargers. I don't remember what the deal was with that.
They're cheap and his daddy wanted to control where he went.
Yeah, sure. But I don't remember what it specifically was about the Chargers that he didn't like. Maybe there's something specific about Washington that Daniels doesn't like. He doesn't like the owner. He doesn't like the coach. He doesn't want to get along with them, or he had a bad interview with them, or they talked at the Senior Bowl or something and he just was rubbed the wrong way. I mean, any of that's possible. And I don't think that's the end of the war. I really don't. And I mean, listen, you just talked about, like, well, this isn't going to happen that much. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter already, who I don't think are going to be, lottery picks next year. Deion saying, I'm going to direct where those two guys go. You think it's the only two players it's going to happen with?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think Shedeur Sanders is just like, it's exactly like Eli Manning. I said this earlier in the show. I said this back.
What about Travis Hunter?
Yeah. I don't know that that's going to apply to Travis Hunter. He can threaten all he wants. I don't think Travis Hunter is going to have much say. Where's Travis Hunter going to go?
I don't know.
The 20s?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what kind of season Colorado has. The point is, I think in the era of NIL, you're going to see more of this, not less of it.
Okay. I don't care because I don't like it. I don't care if I see more of it or not. I don't like it. And so when it comes to Jaden Daniels, why is he doing this? And is Washington getting cold feet? Daniels, the visit didn't go well, according to Schefter. We just played it for you. And this ties in with our big question of the day. Do you worry Drake May going number two to Washington? I need to work on that phrasing.
Come on.
Second to Washington would screw up the Patriots pick at number three. 67% say no. 33% say yes. Now, look, I have a theory as to why people are saying no. Let me hear Jeremy Fowler again. This is from Wednesday. We talked to Fowler in the 5 o'clock hour. Here's what he said about how the Patriots have the quarterback stacked.
So, I got a chance to poll nearly two dozen people around the league and coaches, scouts, and execs, and the feeling is things probably shook out like I thought. Not a lot of major surprises. J.J. McCarthy was really right there as like a fringe tier two, but kind of tier three guy. Like he's sort of number three and a half in the pecking order. A lot of teams I talk to, and I think New England, I believe, is probably in this boat that they have Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy in that order. So, which, you know, probably makes it pretty easy to telegraph the top. But, you know, we'll see. It's the draft, and there could always be wrinkles and smoke screens. But that's sort of the feeling around the league and probably how things will shake out. It just depends on where McCarthy goes. But, you know, Michael Penix and Bo Nix are two quarterbacks that are a preference. You know, like they're probably neck and neck for that fifth quarterback spot.
Okay, so that was Jeremy Fowler. Jaden Daniels would be second on the Patriots board. So maybe in their mind, this is a good thing. For me, it's not. I have Drake May number one. The betting markets, by the way, have moved, and I haven't checked since the beginning of the show. But Drake May and Jaden Daniels were basically even odds to go second. So how much stock should we put in that? I don't know. Will Levis last year, leading up to the draft, was the betting favorite, the odds-on favorite to go second in that draft. And C.J. Stroud wound up going there. A lot of people weren't connecting C.J. Stroud to Houston leading up to that draft. So who knows? Maybe it still ends up Jaden Daniels goes second to Washington, and this is all nothing. But in the meantime, the betting markets are upended. Adam Schefter is backtracking a little bit, saying things didn't go well when Jaden Daniels visited Washington. Where does that leave the Patriots? You guys can jump in. 617-779-7937. You have the updated markets.
FanDuel has Jaden Daniels going number two. I did it now.
Yep.
-140, Drake May +105. So it has shifted
so
a little
bit. It's gone back in the direction of
three
Jaden
is
Daniels.
Now gone. May -120, Daniels +185. Three overall.
Okay. So they've leveled back out a little bit. There was a spike last night. And Schefter has come out and said, by the way, the meeting didn't go well. Who's going number two? That's what we want to know. Who is it? Who does number two work for? Arcan has all the latest here in trending. We're right back with some thoughts on A.J. Brown. Are the Patriots in? We'll get to that after trending.
Jones and Mego.
I never said I could take on a hippo.
No, in fairness, you did.
With Arcand.
You ever see a hippo eat a watermelon? It's amazing.
On Boston Sports Original.
I wonder what Arcand just does with his time.
I watch hippos eating watermelons.
WEEI.
What do you think the Patriots are doing at number three based on some of the latest reports that Washington could be unsure of what they're doing at two?
I think they'll be happy as clams with whichever guy comes to them, whether it be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. I truly do. I asked Elliot Wolf this yesterday, would you look at any of these players as ones that you're settling for? So to me, if you have two highly capable players, you're going to fashion and tailor everything you do to that player's skills. But I think if both the players have particular skills that you can work with, you're happy either way. To me, if you have a preference that is so profound that you're kicking rocks, if you don't get that player, then you have to think about moving down. But I don't think that absolutely exists by any stretch of the imagination. I think that they can definitely look. Who do you think is a better quarterback today? Jaden Daniels, a better quarterback today. J.J. McCarthy is probably a better quarterback today. It's all the upside of Drake May. So if the Patriots are mad because they get a player who's better than Drake May is, as we stand here and the Commanders have taken Drake May, I don't know how you could be dissatisfied.
I don't know that they'd be dissatisfied. But they have a preference.
I think they'll feel like a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that they'd just be okay with whatever they get at three, they might be okay with it, but they prioritize all these quarterbacks differently. And I said this to Arcan yesterday. I'm like, everybody has an opinion on these quarterbacks. I guarantee the Cravs do. Tomasi just found a bunch of scrubs in the Red Sox clubhouse. They all had opinions on it. All of them. They're like, oh, this is what the Patriots should do. That's what the Patriots should do. Take this quarterback. No. You got to get Marvin Harrison. Get Odunze and Penix. Like, even Red Sox players just sitting there on their ass, dropping 3 out of 10, had strong opinions on this. Everybody has an opinion on what they should do at three. It's not that hard. We're not talking about pick 21. We're talking about quarterbacks and the third pick in the draft. The Patriots definitely prefer one of Drake May, Jaden Daniels, or J.J. McCarthy. They're not getting Williams, so let's take him out of it. They have those guys stacked in a certain way. They may not love all three. Let's not pretend they're going to be ecstatic about what they get at three. They might be okay with it. And I would be okay with it. But I want Drake May more than I want Jaden Daniels. I guarantee they have a preference as well. And there's a reason they have a preference. They feel better about one prospect than the other. So they should be doing whatever they can to get that guy and hoping that that guy falls into their laps. And if Washington is sending out mixed signals, or Jaden Daniels' camp is sending out mixed signals, then I'm a little uneasy if I'm the Patriots. Am I so uneasy I trade up to number two, and now Washington gets an extra pick out of me and they play games all along? I don't know. Maybe. I think that's worth it to ensure I get the guy that I want. The Patriots may not be there. They may not have as much conviction in Drake May or Jaden Daniels, whoever it is. By the way, Jeremy Fowler seems to think Jaden Daniels is the guy they prefer to Drake May. I'm not telling you it's May over Daniels on their board. I don't know. I'll defer to Jeremy Fowler on that. But there's one they have ranked higher than the other, and they should want that guy at three.
I agree. It's a little alarming that we're 6 days out from the draft, and the consensus is maybe there's not a consensus behind closed doors. That we were just talking to Tom, that some guys still like J.J. McCarthy and some guys like Drake May. And then we hear other reports that, oh, actually, Drake May and Jaden Daniels are like, they're really into both of those quarterbacks. Like, it just feels a little messy. And I can't tell if that's because every time one of these guys talks, they say six different possibilities of what could happen, or if it's because there's nine different guys in the room and three of them like this guy and six of them like this guy. And by the way, here's what the owner actually likes, and it's wishy-washy and changes by the day too. Like, I'm more concerned about what the mess might be behind scenes. And I know that Curran says it's not contentious behind the scenes. I believe that, but is it confused? Can it be confused? Like, is there somebody who's going to have the loud enough voice and the most conviction to stand there and say, I'm taking this pick and I'm wearing it?
Yeah, I just don't know why I have to assume it's not contentious.
Like, well, Tom told us that.
No, I know, but
I'm saying that's what his reporting was.
I understand, but like, I don't know. My
if your job's right on it, there's probably a little tension.
This is what I think. It's like, it's not contentious at all if they all think they're getting overruled by the owner. Or, you know, Ben McAdoo and Elliot Wolf, or Elliot Wolf and Alonzo Highsmith are over here, and Ben McAdoo and Alex Van Pelt are over there. It's not contentious. I mean, they might not be like ready to fight one another, but like, I'm sure there's tension, right? You just said it, Mego. Jobs are on the line. This is a massive pick for everybody's job security. So I bet there's tension.
Sure, but unless everybody's, you know, pulling in the same direction on everything all the time, then I mean, I'm sure there were people, the scouts who were working for Belichick, when he'd come in and say, no, we're doing this, it was contentious there.
Yeah, but that was like, no, we're doing this on a safety.
Yeah.
This is the quarterback,
I guess.
Off of taking a highly picked quarterback before that was a total disaster.
I agree with Arcan on this. I think there was tons of tension in their draft room, and people were pissed when Bill just overruled them.
Yeah, but so, I think that probably happens in every single draft room in the world, league. I mean,
me
I think it's just contentious. People with different ideas and different opinions who want different things.
So
let's
not pretend it's not. I agree. I think that probably happens in a lot of draft rooms. I agree.
I mean, there's different levels of it, obviously. And this is a unique situation where no one has a job beyond, you know, next week. So I think that also plays a major role in it, too. But when it comes to ownership and them having a preference one way or another, it makes more sense to me just looking at it. I don't know how much college football the Crafts watch. But even if they, are, you know, let's just assume that they're kind of casual college football fans. Who do you think they like? Drake May or the Heisman Trophy winner who in the SEC put up all those numbers? They probably like Daniels more.
Fair point. That could be true.
You know, I mean, like,
I'm not arguing with that.
Unless they're watching all the film and breaking down the footwork and all the other crap. You know what I mean? Like, they could be. But I just sort of feel like Daniels is the more accomplished of the two quarterbacks. And he had a better year last year.
Yeah. I mean, who's more marketable?
I don't know. I mean,
you don't
probably
know?
The Heisman Trophy winner.
Well, yeah, probably, but I don't know. Maybe Drake May is very marketable. I don't know enough about him.
I don't know either. But the guy who won the Heisman is probably the more marketable out of the two, right?
Probably, yeah.
So, like, look, that you make a good case. The Crafts may lean towards the more marketable player. It's a business, and you know they can pretend they don't care about the finances all they want, but they do. And so, who's more marketable? Who's going to sell jerseys? Who's going to create a buzz? The Heisman Trophy winner probably does that more. I agree with that. That's not my personal preference. I like Jaden Daniels, but the further we get along, I like him a little bit less. I don't like that he's trying to dictate where he's going, potentially, if you believe some of the reporting. And even he shows up with four other quarterbacks at Topgolf or wherever they all showed up to. And he's like, wait a minute, I thought I was going to be the only quarterback here. Well, fine, that is strange. I agree with that. Why isn't Drake May squawking about it? Why isn't J.J. McCarthy squawking about it? Who was the fourth quarterback? Was it Nix? Was it Penix? I don't remember. Why isn't that quarterback squawking about it?
Because they didn't expect to be the only ones there.
Okay, but I think how Washington handled it is odd, and the league is confused about why Washington handled it that way, if you believe Florio and others. But only one is complaining about it. So I like him a little bit less. I'd be fine with him at three, but I want to emphasize fine. For the last couple of weeks and months, I thought it was going to be Drake May, who is number one on the Jones big board. 617-779-7937. A few pieces of feedback here before we get into A.J. Brown and the Patriots' interest, which we also talked to Tom Curran about from NBC Sports Boston. If you missed any of it, it's on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Get it on your phone, free, easy. You can listen to it whenever you want. Take it with you wherever you go. Use the rewind feature to listen to our interview with Curran. This text is from Hervev. I'm sorry, Twitch chat, rather. Twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. I fully effing hate the word collaboration. I am getting a little sick of it, right? And it's like, I really never liked it when the Patriots use it. But like this idea that everybody's got to be kumbaya on the same page with the pick, that's not reality.
See, I hear collaboration and I immediately think like, okay, so there's going to be no accountability because nobody has the titles. Nobody has the outward responsibility. The most that we've gotten with that is like Elliot Wolf a couple months ago coming out and saying that he's the one that ultimately makes the pick at the end of the day. But because of the level of the pick and because ownership has made such a big deal about getting their franchise back with Bill Belichick gone, I think a lot of us look at that and go, well, they're going to do what ownership wants.
Well, so. And even he said, you know, if I'm the only one who likes a player, I'm not crazy. I'm gonna listen to the consensus.
Right, and he also is the one who said, hey, last time I was in a position kind of like this, you know, we took
never.
Lamar. Well, we took Baker instead of Lamar, and maybe we would be packing our bags if we took Lamar. Who knows?
So that message in the Twitch chat was also about the Bruins and their collaboration, which my buddy texted. And he said, it's Swayman game one, it's Allmark game two. Book it. They're going with the rotation, in other words.
Swayman game one?
Yep. Look, I also think it's Swayman game one. I don't disagree with that. I disagree with the Allmark game two part. And so, again, I think the Bruins have a collaborative
I disagree
approach.
With it, too, unless Swayman lets in, like, five goals.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And so, like, let's play that out. If Swayman gives up five goals, who starts game two?
Allmark.
Okay. If Swayman shuts them out, who starts game two?
Swayman.
If Swayman gives up one goal but they lose in overtime 1-0, who starts game two?
Swayman.
Okay.
Swayman has to melt down to
so
lose it. That's what I think.
That is also how I feel.
Yeah.
Well, let's do the exercise again, Mego.
Okay.
Swayman gives up five goals. Let's call it in a win. They win. They win 6-5.
Mego wants Allmark game one.
Fire wagon hockey.
Yeah, I'm already off of this.
Okay, right. Good point. I'm sorry. Let's phrase it differently. Okay.
Put in Swayman.
Allmark in game one.
That's the anti-Mego.
It's
go B.
Oh, that was actually B last night.
Fire wagon hockey. Fire wagon hockey. Allmark in your case.
Okay.
Wins game one because you think he's, I think wrongly, but you think he's getting game one. Allmark wins 6-5, Fire Wagon Hockey game one. Who starts game two?
Swayman.
Okay. Allmark gets a shutout in game one. Who starts game two?
Allmark.
Allmark wins in overtime 1-0. Who starts game two?
Allmark wins?
Yeah. No. I'm sorry.
They
I
lose,
said that wrong.
But Allmark
lose,
has a good
they
game.
Lose 1-0, but he only gives up the one
Allmark.
Goal in overtime. Yeah. So we agree. Like, we don't really believe it's a rotation. It's dependent on how game one plays out, which is how I feel. She happens to think Allmark gets game one. I disagree with that.
Swayman.
We'll see who's right. I also think it's one more time, Ryan.
Swayman.
That's also who I think it is. But I think it's completely dependent. Their rotation, their collaborative approach, I think is entirely dependent on how game one goes. But I hate collaboration as well, whether it's the Bruins and their goalie decision or the decision at pick number three.
Or our show.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, I certainly don't believe in collaboration on that. Lighter Riches in the Twitch chat. May is a desperation pick. I don't feel he's a desperation pick, and I would push back on what Curran said. I made a face when he said it in real time. Who's the better quarterback day one? He said Jaden Daniels.
I agree with that.
Maybe Jaden Daniels is better day one than Drake May. J.J. McCarthy, he said, is probably better day one.
This is where it feels...
I reject that.
It feels very different because Jaden Daniels is older. He has more playing experience in college. And so we all know that Drake May, like, to put it kindly, is rough around the edges with some of his decision making and footwork and everything else. So I could see how Jaden Daniels, you would say comparatively, he hits the ground running literally. J.J. McCarthy, it's like just because he comes out of this pro style Michigan program, the kid just turned 21. Like, it's not like he has had all of the experience that someone like Jaden Daniels has had.
Drake May had a down year last year and his numbers were still better than J.J. McCarthy's.
Thank you.
You know, like I didn't agree with that either.
Okay, so like people have moved too far on this. And I'll also say this. People thought Josh Allen wasn't ready. People thought Justin Herbert wasn't ready. Those guys were both starting by week two of their rookie year. And I don't think people remember. Josh Allen was not as terrible as a rookie as people think. He was 5-6, and by year two, he was in the playoffs.
He just looked awful because you had Brady.
Yeah, and he also was inaccurate, and he turned it over, but like, okay, he also made plays. And I think we looked at Tom Brady and we're like, well, Brady's efficient and Brady doesn't turn it over and he's the greatest of all time. And our view on Josh Allen was skewed. Fine, he made mistakes. He also made plays. Drake May, I think, is going to come in and make plays. Jaden Daniels, I think, is going to come in and make plays. J.J. McCarthy in a perfect world doesn't turn it over, but I don't think there's a lot of plays to be made there either. And that is where I think the Mac comparisons really apply. And those should be terrifying. 617-779-7937. Let me hear Burt Breer on NBC Sports Boston last night, early edition, discussing the availability of A.J. Brown.
Burt, is there any reason for us to believe that there is going to be a Tom Brady, A.J. Brown reunion in Foxborough this fall?
No. This isn't the sort of roster that Tom Brady would come back to begin with. Like, I think if Tom Brady is going to come back, it's going to be to some loaded roster that has a quarterback injury later in the year. And even that might not be likely. Maybe he was just saying that to stir the pot. I did have to run this up the flagpole with a few different people. Philadelphia has gotten inquiries on A.J. Brown, and they have shut them all down and told other teams that he is not available.
Okay, so put the Brady stuff to the side for a moment. Although I said I would circle back to this earlier, I actually do want to do that because there's a Brady update today. But on A.J. Brown, our buddy Beadle ended up dragging this out of Breer later on in that segment that the Patriots were one of the teams that inquired. And Philadelphia shut them down. So the Patriots have called about A.J. Brown.
Baby steps.
Yeah. Well, right. Bravo. They couldn't even bother to call about Keenan Allen. I doubt they called on Stephon Diggs, but I don't know that definitively. They did call on A.J. Brown. What do we make of all of that?
I like it. I like that they made the call. That's a good first step. As Arkan said, it's progress from where you were when you called the Chargers. So maybe you asked about some other guys around Philly. Who knows? I might be wish casting. Of course, Philly would sit there and say, like, no, we're not trading him right now. Like, drive up the price. Get as much people interested as you can. Set the market as high as you can for that, especially as we come up on the draft and you know what everybody's got to offer. So I may be wish casting that they're not, like, completely shutting it down and they're more just saying it's got to be some kind of really nice offer.
Yeah, and look, I mean, obviously, they're shutting down trades. They haven't gotten an offer they like yet. So will they lower their asking price, or they're just waiting for somebody to meet their asking price? Those are two different things. Do you think he moves during the draft, Arkan? He moved during the draft last time, two years ago.
He really did. And I think the Eagles here, I mean, the Eagles are in a weird position because they just paid Smith. They have to pay Hurts. Or did they already pay Hurts? He's got that big, extension?
I thought Hurts has been paid.
Like
yeah.
$50 million a year, something like that, I think.
I'll double check. I think Hurts has his contract.
And there's Lane Johnson and some other guys who are making big money. So the Eagles maybe are sort of looking at this like, okay, we have one more crack at it before we really have to go crazy with all this.
Hurts, by the way, signed 5 years, $255 million. I mean, I'm sure those are, if you dig into the details, I'm sure it's not that, but he's signed.
Yeah, so there you go. So, I mean, that's, we always say the cap doesn't matter, but in some cases when you're really spending like crazy, it does, and the bill comes due, and look what happened with Buffalo last year in the offseason. They had to lose a ton of people. So maybe they're running it all back for one last shot at it, but Brown is under contract, and if they do want to trade him, they still got a couple more years to do it, so it's not really a rush for them, but I could see them, yeah, changing their mind and going for it, because look, there's a lot of good receivers in this draft. You trade A.J. Brown, you got Smith there, you bring in another young guy, you know, he probably won't be as good as A.J. Brown, but you still have a pretty good situation there.
Yeah, so to me, the Patriots can call all they want, and you guys both made this point, but it's like, I actually am impressed they called. Most times I'd say, boy, that's just a GM doing their job, but they haven't. They haven't on other players, so good for them for calling. Philadelphia shut it down.
Hello?
I don't think the Patriots are trading for one of these guys. I've said it now for, I don't know, weeks, maybe a month, going back to free agency. They wouldn't pay Ridley. They're now going to pay a guy like A.J. Brown, who's better. You're going to pay him more and give up the pick? I refuse to believe it.
If Brown gets traded to some other team, I'm going to be ripped.
Yeah, he, like, he,
I'm
he might.
Be ripped
I mean,
that
some of these receivers are going to move.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown, Ayuk, maybe T. Higgins. We've already seen Diggs move. We saw Ridley move in free agency. Keenan Allen got traded. Like, I think we're going to see more receivers move. And I'll be pissed every time it happens. But I don't think the Patriots are going to get them. I'll be pleasantly surprised if they do.
It was not because of finance.
It was. No, definitely not. Finance is not a factor.
What would you give up for him?
I would give up 34.
What else?
I don't think it would take more, but if I had to throw in another like mid-round pick, so give up 34 this year and like a future fourth, I would do something like that.
I would too, in a heartbeat.
Okay, so like he's the best receiver that's been available, and I'm interested. Can I just add this because I forgot the beginning of that clip? Trenny asked Bird about having Brady and A.J. Brown. Which, how about this? How about you sign Brady? You trade for A.J. Brown and you take Harrison at three.
Tom.
Now we're cooking. Now we're on to something. Mm-hmm. I think this is some of what Cadlick wrote about today at WEEI, if you want to check that out.
I think it just moved.
On the Odyssey app. Tom. Like all of a sudden, that's a team. How many games does that team win? Harrison, A.J. Brown, and Brady.
Tom.
17-0.
Yeah, I was literally going to say the same thing. They don't lose. That's an undefeated team. It's exactly what I was going to say.
Tom, like 70s Dolphin team to kick rocks.
Tom Brady, I guess, tweeted out a video today of him running.
Ooh.
It moved again.
Okay, so
he's jealous of all the clout Taylor Swift is getting.
So he put out a video, and I guess it's through Noble, and Noble acquired TB12. That was another Brady flex on Mac Jones. But they put out a video of him running today. In other words, sending out a message. Some are reading into this. Sending out a message that I'm in shape, come get me. I talked about coming back. I talked about playing. I talked about an MJ-like return. Now there's videos of me, oh, by the way, in shape running. Do we read into that?
I think he's trying to sell compression shorts. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
He's like, well, look at me. I'm the ultimate model.
You know how you sell them? You come back and play. You don't sit in the booth on Fox. You come back and play.
Oh, because Jordan stopped selling shoes when he stopped playing?
When did he sell more?
I don't know. I haven't looked at his sales.
I would imagine he sold more as a player.
I don't think the brand's struggling.
No, I don't think it's struggling, but I think it's, number one, it's Michael Jordan. His brand always did better than TB12, which got bought out by Noble. And number two, I think the best way to do it is by playing. You don't think TB12, the sales went down when he retired?
They probably did. Again,
I mean,
I don't know.
It's not even its own brand anymore.
Well, also, what happened to Brady brand? I saw some of that at TJ Maxx.
Oh,
that's been acquired by Noble as well, I think. I think that was all part of it.
What was the name of that, like, harness thing that Brett Favre was selling? You remember that?
No.
It was like that weird thing for, like he's like I may be old, but I still like going out and playing in the mud with my buddies.
Wait,
and it's like
what?
Him playing. You don't remember this? It was like an infomercial.
Those were Levi's.
It wasn't Levi's.
Those were jeans.
It was like
no.
Man bra?
It was not.
You could get one of those.
I remember
Jones.
Those Levi ads too, but there was another one where it's Brett Favre and he's wearing this like girdle basically, and he's talking about how it's like makes him so free and everything.
Intern Jacob is nodding.
Okay. I forget what it is. I'll look it up. But
a man girdle?
It was like basically, yes.
It was like the Moulin Rouge video.
Kinda, yeah. It's after he was retired.
No,
but
it's a thing. It's the back brace.
Did it have
the
push-up
Brett Favre
in
back
it?
Brace?
He's like D and Always Sunny.
Yes, it's a man's ear.
The aluminum monster.
The aluminum monster.
but either way, it was after he'd retired, and I feel like Jordan's the exception. Like obviously, the Jordan brand's still going strong.
Yeah,
but everybody else, after they retire, the stuff they sell, they don't sell as much.
Fine. I mean,
it's
look,
weird that girdle didn't fly off the shelves.
Jordan keeps moving
one.
Shoes. Fair point. How's Brady's brand
You're
done since
it
he retired?
Right now?
You want to move your brand? Come back and play. And I'll tell you what would move if Brady comes back.
Tom?
below this desk, Tom, is what would move.
It's a copper girdle?
Copper fit?
The copper fit. Yeah, the copper fit. That's what it was. Okay, the copper
that's
fit.
A knee brace. That's not a girdle.
No, it was you wore it around girdles. His waist.
Well, if you're watching on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, Brian has this up.
Back support.
These aren't, knee braces.
Okay,
like
this
sleeves.
Is the knee one, but there was one for his back, too.
I don't see a girdle. You
okay.
promised girdle, and I don't see
this
anything.
This isn't the same one, I guess.
Don't worry.
I don't see Favre in this ad.
That's very on-brand.
Oh, there he is. All right, there's Favre.
Very
Where's
on
the girdle?
Arcan's algorithm is what it is. we'll get to your feedback coming up. What do we have in triple play, Arcan?
Triple play, it is
more
a fill-in-the-blank Friday, and we got the playoffs coming up in the NBA and in the NHL. We'll reminisce about the Celtics and the Bruins.
Okay, let's do that next.
It's going to be a triple play!
It's time for the triple play.
Yes! Triple play!
Top three burning questions of the day.
And there's three.
With Jones and Mego.
Triples is best. Triples is best.
Triples is best. I don't live in a hotel and it is Friday, Jones and Mego. That makes it a fill in the blank Friday. So let's start filling in some blanks.
Number one.
Mego, we begin with you. Your favorite non-finals Celtics playoff series of all time was blank.
So I would say when they beat the Cavs in 7 in 2008. Because that game 7 where Pierce and LeBron both scored in the 40s.
That was awesome.
Was really awesome. And if I remember back, it was like game 3 that they got absolutely destroyed by Cleveland. Like absolutely pantsed and embarrassed. So it was a great little comeback. And so I enjoyed that one. That comes to mind.
Yeah, look, I actually didn't see the end of that game. I was listening to it on the radio, and I do not remember where I was driving or what I was doing, but I was in the car listening to that game 7. That game 7 was great. I don't feel like that series was great. And so to me, and this is not a great series either, I love the Celtics ending LeBron James's tenure in Cleveland in 2010. And I think they won in five games. They, like, ran him out of the gym. They were the four or the five seed. LeBron was the one seed. They had acquired Shaq that year. They had made all these moves that, in retrospect, are laughable. It wasn't Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Anthony Davis and, you know, some of the other Kyrie, Kevin Love, guys like that that he's played with. It was like Mo Williams and Shaq, right, is who they had acquired in Cleveland.
I think Jonas Ilgauskas was still running
well,
around.
Well, yeah, he was probably on those teams. And so I just love that the Celtics ended that. And they ended it in embarrassing fashion, LeBron walking off the court, ripping off his jersey, and he went right to Miami. I love that they made him tap out. If we're talking about non-NBA Finals series, that series was great. And it was like a fun, not just win for the Celtics, but also point and laugh at LeBron, which still felt like, you know, he was never going to win at that point. You thought he was never going to win at that point in time.
I loved both of those.
You certainly thought he was never going to win in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, he didn't. But I'm sorry.
Eventually.
On that Cleveland.
In that first time around. Mine's 1991 Celtics against the Pacers. It was when Bird hit the ground and then came back out in the old garden. That Pacers team. Chuck Person, Reggie Miller, Detlef Schrempf, Rick Smits.
The Rifleman.
A stacked Pacers team. That went five. Celtics lost in the next round to the Pistons. But that series was awesome. So that's mine.
I have a question.
Yes.
Have you found the t-shirt that Ryan gave you for Christmas?
Oh, good question.
I looked for it. No, I have no idea where it is.
Arcan.
I don't know where it is.
You
I'm
don't
sorry.
Appreciate anything.
I appreciate lots of things.
What's the closest landfill to Dedham? That's probably where it is.
That is so rude, Arcan.
Yeah. Arcan got a nice gift from Ryan. He put it right in the garbage.
You said you appreciate lots of things?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Liar.
And I do appreciate that shot.
What's number two, liar?
Here's a fill in the blank number two.
Number two.
Let's start with you, Jones. Your favorite non-finals, non-cup finals Bruins playoff series was blank.
Okay. Now, I have been accused by Brian of losing my fastball. He said he was very disappointed that I didn't choose 2009 when the Bruins blew a 3-0 lead against the Philadelphia Flyers. Perhaps I have lost my edge and my fastball. I enjoyed, or was that 2010 maybe? I enjoyed when the Bruins beat the Canadiens in round one, game seven, overtime, on their way to the cup. And that, to me, that felt like something they needed to exercise to advance. I know they swept the Flyers back the following year, which
very
is a great series. It was anticlimactic, but it was like a great way to answer. That Montreal series was excellent. Like, you know, P.K. Subban was out there. Subban was out there sniping goals left and right. It was a back-and-forth series. A bunch of them went to overtime. It was a bunch of, like, bounce-of-the-puck level things. And it was Horton who got the game winner in that game seven,
yes.
Correct? Right? You know, Michael Ryder had big goals. Like, it was a fun series. It was a back-and-forth series. I had no idea the Bruins were going to go on a run all the way to winning a cup, and that's what started it. That's the series that jumps out to me.
Okay, so mine is a series I covered, which was also first round, 2019, the Toronto series, because I remember DeBrusk got into – he had some beef with somebody on Toronto, and they got suspended, and he was wearing this weird hat in the locker room after every single game that looked like the character from Catcher in the Rye, and Tuukka Rask had a signature Game 7 performance, which I'm sure you hated.
So I did hate that. So you like 2019. I thought you were going to 2013 when Bergeron got the game winner. I assume that's what a lot of fans would answer. I just, similar to your year, they didn't go on to win anything. Like, everybody, I think everybody kind of lumps, like, if you ask most Bruins fans, what was what?
Sorry, I thought Ryan Kadri. Said that over there.
Oh, got it.
It was Kadri.
I was trying to kill everybody in that series.
A bunch of Bruins fans, or like, you know, maybe like more casual fans, maybe not the hardcores, but a lot of casual fans, I think of that run in 2013, and they lump it together with 2011. It was a lot of the same guys, and are like, oh, yeah, they went on to win the Cup. No, they didn't. They went on to just
the
lose.
The defensive pairings in that Chicago series were unbelievable.
They went on to lose and choke on home ice in Chicago, which is the quietest I've ever heard an arena in my life when they lost that game six. But, look, that was a great moment, too. I went with the Montreal series because at least it led to a cup.
Yeah, mine would be 2013, that same year, the Pittsburgh series where they swept Pittsburgh.
Oh, and Tuukka
only let in two goals in the four games.
So, look,
that was an awesome series.
That was a great series. And remember, they ended up getting Aginla the next year.
Right.
But Aginla wormed his way out of getting traded to the Bruins. And I think the last save from Tuukka, or one of them anyway, when he shut him out and won that they swept in that series was on Aginla, which was poetic justice.
And I also remember Char slapping the Crosby around, which I like too. All right, question three.
Number three.
All right, you probably saw Greg Doyle and Caitlin Clark. That embarrassing exchange that happened there. Doyle getting dragged all over Twitter for it. Mego, the most embarrassing question you've ever asked or the most embarrassing exchange you've ever had in an interview is blank.
I kind of had a hard time with this one. I'm sure I embarrass myself.
I'm just so good at interviews.
I know.
All the
I'm such a professional. I never have any awkward things.
I'm sure I embarrass myself all the time. But the one that I always just think of now is from just earlier in the football season. when we were on a remote and I screeched at Orlovsky.
Is it buy-in?
It's just so obnoxious.
What,
is it buy-in? Is it buy-in? Shut up. So that one's tough. And it's a drop that lives on.
So, look, I just want to say this about Greg Doyle. As awkward as that exchange was, it was definitely an awkward exchange.
He shouldn't be, like, canceled over it.
I don't think he was, people think he was, like, hitting on her. He wasn't hitting on her, you idiots. He was just being awkward. And it's like, oh, he's being a creep. I don't think he was being a creep. I know a lot of people here hate Greg Doyle because he was anti-Patriots and he was pro-Colts and everything, and that's fine. But, like, I if you really think he was hitting on her, you're a moron. It was an awkward, stupid thing that he did, but that's not what he was attempting to do. He was trying to make a joke and it fell flat. So that's my piece on that. The most awkward interview I did, maybe you would think it's Danny Amendola hanging up on me. No.
Gilmore flushing the toilet on you.
Gilmore flushing the toilet also was quite awkward. Okay, I have a lot of these. Maybe it was Mac Jones telling me that I don't know football. No. The most awkward one that I ever had is one that never saw the light of day. But I did a one-on-one. It was early on in my time, I believe, at another station here in the city. And I would try to do these one-on-one interviews. I got Durant at one point in time. Kevin Martin on the Sacramento Kings at the time was like a 20-point-per-game scorer.
All the Kevins.
Fringy all-star kind of guy. And, you know, my little go-to to kind of like warm everybody up in the interview, get them going. Oh, you went to this college. I just saw this happen with your college in football or college hoops or whatever, right? So to commiserate, this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy read up on me. I thought Kevin Martin, for some reason, went to East Carolina. And I don't know why I would have even had any questions about East Carolina. But I thought he went to Eastern Carolina. He went to Western Carolina. And he immediately corrected me. It flustered me. Him and whatever player was sitting to his left, my right, then just proceeded to just chirp me the whole rest of the interview. They were like mocking me and like chirping me. And I was so flustered and I was, you know, still fat in like whatever dirty golf shirt that
Shut
I had.
Shut up, my bibby.
No, they were like literally mocking me to my face. And
dork.
I'm like, I am not sending this interview. This will never see the light of day. I'm deleting it. And it was awkward. And I ran out of that locker room. It was the worst thing that I ever did professionally.
That was the worst thing?
I think so. So flustered and so.
I mean, I certainly have worse professional moments, but like.
It was where you were getting chirped openly by two guys on the Sacramento Kings?
No.
Where you had to run out of the locker room? I don't know. That was about as bad as it got for me.
John Salmon just roasting you.
I wish I could remember who it was.
More obscure Kings.
I blacked it out as much as I could. I blacked out whoever was to, again, the left of Mike Bibby, my right of Mike Bibby. It's burned into my brain. I ran out of there.
Put a cigarette out on your
forehead. What was your most awkward? I think we all know.
No, it's not. You probably don't know. Mine was in college. I was sort of part-time with the college radio station, and these guys were doing an interview with Big Daddy Kane, the rapper Big Daddy Kane. And they said, Arkin, you're a big hip-hop fan. You want to interview Big Daddy Kane? I said, yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. I'd love to at least get a question. Can I get a question? They said, sure. And so I had a question all ready to go. I, like, wrote it down. And before I went in, one of the guys who connected everybody to Big Daddy Kane said, hey, ask him about this. And it was about some record label he used to be on. And I was like, yeah, you think so? He's like, yeah, totally. Ask him about that. And I went in and I asked him about the wrong record label. And he was like, wow, you must be really young, huh? And I got embarrassed by Big Daddy Kane. And so they cut my question out of the interview.
They edited it right out.
Yeah. It was
so
to be played
young.
Later, and I got cut out of that.
Good move.
It was pretty pretty embarrassing.
John in the car in the Twitch chat reminded me about Kike. I forgot about that one, too. That wasn't the most seamless.
Oh, the reality TV
like 15
one.
15 minutes.
The most seamless interview. Well, are you the leader of this team? Why are you the leader of this team? And he got all defensive about it. And it turns out he shouldn't have been the leader of that team, and he sucked anyway.
It's the only time he was effectively defensive.
Yeah, seriously, because he couldn't play the position.
Nice.
That's true, Mago. 617-779-7937. That's Triple Play each and every day at this time here
that was
on
mean.
Jones.
I'm mean when I'm hungover.
Jones and Mego with Arkan. I like how Mego's like, I don't even have any awkward interviews. I just listed like six of them that I have. we'll continue here with all your feedback. Let's circle back to any trade back scenarios for the Patriots next.